Well, welcome back to The Agenda with your Missoula County Commissioners. I'm Commissioner Dave Strohmeyer. I am joined with my friend and fellow Commissioner Josh Slotnick today. Commissioner Juanita Vero is unable to make it this week. She will be back for future editions of this show. But today, we are delighted to have a couple guests with us from the Office of Emergency Management of Missoula County. And I will just let them each introduce themselves. So, first...
Okay, Nick. I'm Nick Holloway, and I'm a Deputy Disaster and Emergency Services Coordinator at the Office of Emergency Management.
I'm Ken Parks. I'm also a Deputy Director at the Missoula County Office of Emergency Management.
Great. Thanks so much for joining us, guys. I imagine you have something better, more important to do than join us today. So we really appreciate that you would take the time. So you guys just came back from a pretty big deal trip. Do you mind describing that?
Sure. We went over to Maui to support the recovery of the Lahaina fire. And that fire occurred back in August, but they are still recovering and will be recovering for a long time. We were over there helping them out.
Yeah. So what did you see?
And by we, who actually went over there?
Yeah. Members of our team went over there. We had four different groups of people that went over there, and so we had a member of our team there.
And by team, incident management team?
Our Western Montana All-Hazard Incident Management team, yeah.
Okay.
We had somebody over there in November, and then we had a couple people over there in November and December, followed by us in January, and followed by another group from Montana in February, and another person just came back. So there are actually not four, but five different assignments over there.
So... what did you see and what did you do?
We helped them out with debris removal. That's a big thing that's still going on. Toxic debris occurs after a big fire like that. So they started off by getting up all the toxic debris they could off the sites. And then they had the EPA come in and dig down 6 inches deep and test the soil to see if there was any toxicity in it. And if there was, they'd dig down another 6 inches and see if there was any toxicity in that. So we helped with coordinating that a little bit, but also with coordinating entry management. So we still have thousands of people wanting to get into their property and see how it was and collect whatever, you know, valuables may be left over and just have a little bit of closure to what occurred on their property. So we helped with entry management to that. And then there's a housing piece. So you got thousands of people displaced in Maui. So they're trying to get people back into some sort of permanent housing, but there is not a lot of permanent housing because it's an island. And oh, by the way, they're also displacing tourists. So there's that economic hit on top of the housing hit.
That was a big portion of what we did. We were also there to help support the Maui County Emergency Management in case there was another disaster that occurred. Yeah. They had a lot of gaps in their organization left over from that big event. You know, in our particular skill group, you know, we had some experience in what Nick was describing, but we also had experience in managing disasters from that emergency management level, helping them develop programs, taking a look at their organization. They had a new director who had just been hired a couple days before we got there. So he had a lot of questions about how to set up his program. We did our best to kind of guide them and set them moving forward. And then we were there followed up by the next group that went over, who were also experienced emergency managers from Montana, who were hoping to assist them build their program back up and start over because they essentially lost 90% of their staff and were looking at having to rebuild their program. So that was part of what we were also tasked to do.
So in the media, this fire was portrayed as a really, really serious event, quite a tragedy for folks on this island. Is that how you guys saw it?
Yeah. The town of Lahaina is devastated. It's everything you've heard. There's a couple strip malls left. There's some pockets of houses left, but it's pretty well flattened. And it was a horrific scene when it occurred. You can see that by being there.
So. What really struck us is the history at Lahaina. It was the original birthplace of the original kings of Hawaii before it was ever even discovered by Western civilization. And so that Lahaina area has layers and layers of archaeological history and just the depth there and the importance of that area to the people that live there, on the entire state of Hawaii, not just the island, was so significant and something that I don't think really gets communicated much as to just the importance of Lahaina itself to all Hawaiians and Native Hawaiians especially. The intricacies and the delicacy of what is happening there and how touched and impactful that disaster was to everyone there. You had to be there to witness and talk to people who had seen it, had lived through it. We worked with several people whose homes were burned and they were displaced and still working with us at the emergency management. And just to hear their testimonials of the struggles and everything that they're going through, it really pulled at your heartstrings, and it was touching. And we were extremely grateful to be able to get the opportunity to go over there and help them.
Yeah, what you're describing reminds me that incidents like that oftentimes bring out the worst in people, but also bring out the absolute best. Mm-hmm. And what you're describing is some of that best of folks that are still invested in the community, wanting to help out.
A lot of fears that it'll never be the same, you know, and there's, you know, many of the problems that occurred in Lahaina started in the building codes and the history there of the sugar factories and the beginning of Lahaina, you know, when it started to be built up in the manner that it is today or was to, you know, prior to the fire, you know, started pre-industrial with footpaths and shacks and the workers sort of just building that from the ground up and their families moving in and the end result being a very tightly built neighborhood that was in danger of a fire event like
and
that.
Another thing that's come across in the media is that locals are quite concerned that rebuilding or reconstruction won't be inclusive of them because the tourist value for that real estate is so extreme that they feel vulnerable to being excluded from really what is their homeland. How's that playing out on the ground right now, or is it too early to tell?
I think it's too early to tell. They're not even close to rebuilding yet.
Okay.
So when they get there, they're going to have to consider that. And I know that the Maui County government is thinking about those kind of things. But they also have to consider, you know, if they want to maintain their tourist industry, they need the people there to support that, the workers to support that. So they need affordable housing for those folks. It's similar to what we see all over the country.
Yep.
So that is a big consideration as they move forward.
Just kind of armchairing this and seeing our ability to help out thousands of miles away strikes me as a testament to the expertise and the skills that we have to bring. But I'm sure there are folks out there wondering, the United States is a big country. How is it that Missoula County
it's a great question.
got plugged into helping out our friends and neighbors in Lahaina?
We experience wildfires here in Missoula County, which gives us the opportunity to practice our craft all the time. So we might not do the huge incidents like hurricanes and things all the time, although we do go do that kind of stuff. But we get a lot more reps in, so to speak, when we go do a lot more fires. We practice the incident command system, which is a universal system that you can go plug in anywhere. We've become pretty adept at that. We have a planning cycle that is really important. Every day we go through a meeting cycle that tells us what we're going to do for the day, what we need to be thinking about and anticipating in the future, what problems we're up against, and what we're going to do the next day. We have tactics meetings every day. We just get a lot of practice in with that.
So is there some type of professional association or something such that with the folks in Lahaina, I imagine they said to themselves, holy moly, we are in way over our head. This is huge. We're small. We need some help. When I say professional association, was there a place where they could look and be like, oh, here we go. Missoula County, right there at the top of the list. We'll call them. How did they get from where they were to having you guys on the ground?
The emergency management community and the disaster response community, it truly is small. You know, once you travel like we have to Florida and other places and people that we've hosted here in Montana during disasters, you build relationships.
Okay.
A member of our team, Brad Davis, went over early. He noted, you know, that some of the issues they were starting to bubble to the surface were things that us in Montana were similar to. We're a similar size of government, and we have some similarities in some of the issues that we faced. And they thought that, and Brad mentioned to them that there were emergency managers in Montana who could come over and help them rebuild their program, but at the same time also had incident management experience that we could maintain the needs of the Lahaina event at the same time. So they were looking for that kind of cross-pollination of emergency managers and those with emergency management experience. Kind of a rare bird to have both of those. So having that relationship built prior to that and then having them kind of, you know, point out, say, hey, these guys from Montana could help you. And then we sort of built that relationship over those two roles prior to us. And so then they were comfortable kind of understanding what we did in Montana, and we were comfortable with the mission they were asking us to do.
There's also something called EMAC, Emergency Management Assistance Compact, and that's really a state-to-state mutual aid system. Locally, they talked to their state disaster and emergency service office and said, we need help. We need these kind of guys, these team members, these incident team members, to come over and help, and they get specific on what they need. It might be an operations section chief or a liaison officer or a public information officer, whatever it may be, all the different roles on an incident management team. And they put that out there to other states. And so that went out there to other states, and we got name requested because, as Ken mentioned, they knew who we were, found out who we were.
That's great.
But if there's not a name request, I'll just put it out there as a position they need, and then people answer the call for that position.
That name request is quite a compliment to you guys.
It was. Yes, it was.
Yeah. I suspect this is new to some of our listeners that we leave Missoula County to help others, but I suspect there's a sense of reciprocity here in that when we need help, we can probably anticipate that there are others in the broader world out there who are waiting in the wings that are
going to give us a hand. You're absolutely right, Dave. I mean, no community, no county, no state even can metabolize, can deal with disasters on this scale, and we always have gone and looked for help from the outside, and we're willing to go and help others. And you know, you can't expect others to come help you without being willing to go help them. You know, it's just kind of the way that emergency management works. So we're always stand at the ready to go and help our other citizens in other states and other counties. And when we have that event here, the Yellowstone flooding being an example of when we reached out to Florida to bring in emergency managers to help deal with that disaster. And then, you know, it wasn't a few months later, we were heading down to Florida to help them with a hurricane. So the way that works throughout the country, it's good for all of us when we're willing to go and help. And it's not easy. There are financial constraints, there's delays in payment, there's just things you have to deal with, and not everybody can do it. But here in Missoula County, we're extremely grateful, you know, that we have the support of the commissioners and our local government to go out and do these things to become better at what we do. And when we come back home, you know, we have experience, and we are better emergency managers for having been able to travel.
So if we pivot to the local, we're in a place, obviously, with extreme fire danger. We're pretty in a precarious spot. Sometimes we get snowy winters. Sometimes we get rainy springs. Sometimes we get flooding. What do you guys do to plan? I've heard from people when we go to talk to folks around the county at the various community councils, some people say, there's no plan. I'm like, oh, there's absolutely a plan. We maybe haven't communicated it. What do you guys do generally around planning if and when there are disasters in our county?
Well, for seasonal events like flooding, we get together with our cooperating partners, like the sheriff's office and the health department. We do a pre-planning meeting every year, and we sort of game out what could happen, and we kind of think of worst case scenarios, and then we can back off of that as much as we need to. But if we think about the worst, then we can deal with something a little lesser than that. And so we get everybody to the table, and we start talking about who's going to do what and what everybody's role is. And that's really helpful for when and if it does occur. It may not occur, and if it doesn't occur, then we went through an exercise and we'll be more ready the next time. But knowing the players at the table before the incident occurs can be really helpful.
Yeah, I think it was last spring. We have a new floodplain administrator.
Yeah.
And so we got together and did an exercise so that we could introduce all the new players. You know, you get new fire captains, you get new people within the different organizations. And it's good to revisit that, you know, every so often and bring everybody into a room and make sure we're all familiar with each other and understand our roles when a disaster occurs.
How about for non-seasonally predictable, and I don't mean predict to the day, but that flooding or fire is at some point going to happen. I'm thinking of disasters like a train derailment or a tanker filled with diesel fuel turning over at an intersection and getting hit by another car.
So that's where
something else we couldn't.
That's imagine. Where our training comes in really helpful, the incident command system training and the planning cycle that I mentioned before. But it's also where relationships come in helpful because those relationships that we have for flooding and wildfire and everything else, they're the same people we're going to be working with on whatever the disaster may be. So we always try and keep those relationships current and maintain them. And as a matter of fact, when we go on assignments to Hawaii or Florida or other areas, one of the very first things we do is start developing relationships with the people there. And when we're ready to leave, we usually have really good, fond, close relationships with people. But that's one of the biggest things, because you can't build trust until you start building a relationship. So we want to build trust as soon as we get there and in as sincere a manner as we can. And then we become friends with these folks to the point where they start sometimes asking us if they can come out with us. So we met some people in Hawaii that we may be teaming up with, and they may be coming over to help us when the time comes. And same with what Ken was mentioning with the person from Florida. So
fantastic.
Any lessons learned from your experience in Hawaii that might be transferable or applicable to emergency management here in Western Montana?
Fire preparedness for regular people.
One of the striking similarities was the tight housing. You know, and when we look at if we had several thousand displaced citizens, and if that was to take this same kind of timeline, how would we, you know, handle a problem like that? How would we help those people? What would we need to do to restabilize that situation and make sure that their families and their jobs and everything that gets affected by that, you know, watching what they did and the relationships between FEMA and the state and the county and all those different entities that were trying to solve that problem together. When you look at it, it appears unsolvable. It just appears like it is going to be an issue for them for so long, but it's something that we can kind of now take a look at and say, we have relationships with FEMA and we have relationships with the state, and it's something we can bring up to them now and say, you know, hey, if this happened here, if we were to lose, you know, several hundred homes and have, you know, all these displaced people, and if it's going to take this long to rebuild, how do we manage that? You know, how do we keep those people part of the community? In Montana, we've always had that neighbor helping neighbor and people stepping up, and it's amazing. And it was the same in Hawaii, to see those people, you know, just grassroots movements coming up and people helping each other. And we've seen that in Montana time and time again. When we have a disaster, you know, often our times, our shelters are not staffed by, and nobody shows up there because they have friends and relatives, they have places to go. And on a scale like that, how would that look for us, and what can we do to prepare for something like that? There's no perfect answer, but it's certainly sparked conversation and gets us thinking about some of those, you know, worst case scenarios and what can we do to help prepare ourselves for that.
And here in Montana, in Missoula specifically, we have what we call COADs, Community Organizations Active in Disaster. And they're the kind of organizations that sort of help us start picking up the pieces after the initial response is over, or while that's winding down. So the firefighters and the law enforcement and the emergency medical folks do what they do. Now they're backing off, but now you've got a bunch of people that need help in other ways. They may need a place for their child to go hang out while they pick up the pieces. They may need food or those kind of things. So you develop relationships with the COAD groups, Community Organizations Active in Disaster, and you try and get them to help out in ways where they're not duplicating efforts or stepping on each other's toes. And this, we saw this happen during COVID here in Missoula. We developed task forces to help groups with similar missions come together, formulate that mission, and figure out who's going to do what without stepping on each other's toes, so we can help them work as efficiently as possible.
Now, I heard a rumor that there might be a new app that's going to be available at some point, and I don't know if it's for emergency responders or for the public. Fill us in.
So the app you're talking about is called Pulse Point, and it's a 911 connected app. When somebody calls 911 to report that somebody close by is having a cardiac emergency, this app will alert other people that are trained in CPR in the vicinity to come and respond and get that early CPR, hands-only CPR, going, because the quicker you can get that going, the more survivable the event is. And every minute counts in a cardiac event. So that helps get that going a little faster. At the same time, 911 will get the emergency medical folks moving to the scene, and we'll tell those folks that are at the scene where the closest AED is. The idea, obviously, is that it quickens response and can save lives here in Missoula County.
Great.
That's fantastic.
It is fantastic. All right, our final question.
For 10 points.
For 10 points. Good call. Yeah. Have you guys in the recent past run across anything in a book or a movie or a podcast or a conversation with someone where you felt like, man, there was a nugget of wisdom worthy of remembering or even worthy of passing on? And if something like that crossed your path, let us know.
So I read a book not long ago called 1 Second After by a guy named William Forstchen. It's related to emergency management. It's about electromagnetic pulse, or an EMP, occurring. It's an attack from a foreign country.
What? I think an EMP is something Dave may know.
Well, I don't know. It came up in I watched Godzilla over the weekend. It was in there.
Well done. So, yeah. What is an EMP?
So an EMP is a nuclear blast way up in the air, and it takes out electrical devices all over the place. So all of a sudden, electricity is gone. And it's a real thing. It's as real as nuclear weapons are. And so I read this book, and it was in the aftermath of an EMP attack. And it really showed what it was like for society to, how quickly society can unravel in an event like that. Because, you know, you're in seconds, you're going back 200 years in development. And we're so reliant on current technology. And it was just fascinating to see how people handled that. And government was essentially gone, so they had to rebuild their government on their own. And of course, that didn't go really smoothly. And so,
on some days,
I've heard from folks who think that might be a good idea.
And so it honed in on themes like preparedness and resilience, and just what a community really is. You know, so it was a fascinating read. It was a
cool.
It was not a very thick book, but it was really interesting.
1 second after.
1 second
after.
Wow.
Okay. Thanks, Nick.
Yeah. You bet.
While we were in Hawaii, the locals there took time to teach us some of the local language and show us some of the words that they use. And one of the words was the kuleana, which is your thing that you do well, the thing that inspires you. And so the question would kind of be, well, what is your kuleana? You know, what inspires you? What is your bag? What is the thing that you like to do a lot of? So I found that word to be very interesting, very cool.
That's really great.
So that was something that brought back with me.
That's beautiful.
Care to share what yours is?
My kuleana?
Yeah.
My kuleana at this moment is emergency management.
That's all right. Then you're in the right place, man.
Yeah, that's right.
They taught us a word a day over there, I think. I would try and text my wife back, text in full Hawaiian.
Oh, nice. I did a little work on a farm in Hawaii a long time ago, and the phrase I remember was, choke kind grinds, just eat good food.
Thanks, guys. We really appreciate you joining us.
Well, thanks, guys.
Nick and
thanks,
Ken. Thanks a ton, and thanks for
everything you do. We rest assured, move about with a sense of security in large part because you guys are here.
Well,
thank you.
Thank you appreciate guys for it. Your support.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Agenda. If you enjoy these conversations, it would mean a lot if you'd rate and review the show on whichever podcast app you use.
And if you know a friend who would like to keep up with what's happening in local government, be sure to recommend this podcast to them.
The Agenda with the Missoula County Commissioners is made possible with support from Missoula Community Access Television, better known as MCAT, and our staff in the Missoula County Communications Division.
If you have a question or a topic you'd like us to discuss on a future episode, email it to communications@missoulacounty.us.
To find out other ways to stay up to date with what's happening in Missoula County, go to missoula.co/countyupdates.
Thanks for listening.